This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio.
The Mr. Right Checklist by Melissa Foster. Performed by Sebastian York and Savannah Peachwood. For everyone who believes in love, and even those who don't. Chapter 1, Destiny. I finally did it, Molly, I say excitedly to my favorite client as I give her a trim. I put up my website and handed out flyers to start my marriage proposal business last week, and I already booked my first client. I have been dreaming about this for so long, I can hardly believe it's finally happening. Guess what it's called? Get the Yes. How cute is that? It's better than Let Destiny Do It. Ruby, my best friend since childhood, and my boss, calls out from the other room. That was a great name, I call back. It made you sound like a sex worker, Ruby says with a laugh. What does Molly think of your plan? I look at the big, lovable Bernice Mountain Dog I'm grooming. She's as excited as I am, aren't you, Moll? As if on cue, Molly barks. I kiss her snout and grab a brush to finish grooming her as Ruby breezes into the room with Chipster, a rascally white labradoodle who's covered in dried mud again. Ruby, on the other hand, looks as stunning as always, and it has less to do with the clothes she's wearing under her grooming apron, her flawless dark skin, or her chic buzz cut that makes her high cheekbones and dark eyes stand out, and more to do with her inner beauty, which radiates from her heart in endless patience and support. How are you doing on time? Ruby asks. Should we have Laura call Molly's dad and let him know you're running late? Laura runs the front desk of Ruby's pet grooming business, Perfect Paws. Nope, I'll be done in time. I went to a neighboring town to drop off flyers before work and have been running behind all day. But the last thing I want is for Laura to call Grumpy Gus and make him even grumpier. The man barely says two words to me as it is. Did you happen to see the picture of the Chiffon Park gazebo at sunset that I posted on my social pages last night? Yes. She settles the pooch on the grooming table. The bouquet of white roses was a nice touch. It made me want to get married again. She'd met her husband, John, while attending college in New York. I'd helped John plan the perfect scavenger hunt proposal, and they'd had a simple wedding in our hometown of Roseville, Georgia. I will happily expand my business to include vow renewal proposals. Once you're established, you should put together the ceremonies, too. I bet you'd make a killing. Think about it. You'd double your income from working with the same couple. Ruby glances over as she brushes Chipster. Have you told your dad yet? My chest constricts. I lost my mom when I was 11. My father raised me alone, and we were as thick as thieves. I was beyond devastated when he passed away unexpectedly a little more than a year ago. I continue to pay his cell phone bill, just so I can hear his voice when I miss him or want to share news or even talk something out like we used to when I'd ramble and he'd listen. I'd never admit the whole cell phone thing to anyone else, but Ruby is like a sister to me. Which is why 3 months ago, after a year of Ruby's urging, I moved to Harmony Point, New York, to start over in the same town where she and John live. So far, I love it here, with its cobblestone streets, brick-front eclectic shops, and old-fashioned streetlights. I called him as soon as the site went up and the flyers were printed. I know he's smiling down on me. I'm so excited, I feel like I'm vibrating inside. Really? I couldn't tell, she giggles. Hush up, you pest. I saw someone pick up one of your flyers at La Love when I was getting coffee earlier, and Heaven said she and Echo have been talking you up to customers. La Love Cafe and Gift Shop is located a few doors down from Perfect Paws in the center of town. It's owned by the Love family and run by Heaven Love and her brother, Echo. They're the best. How's your first big job coming along? I still can't believe you agreed to plan it in such a rush. I mean, a week? That's asking a lot. You should have charged double and gotten it all up front. I know you think so, but I need the experience. As far as the timing goes, it has to be done that fast. I didn't even have time to meet with my client in person because the timeline is so tight. We've done everything over the phone and through email. She said after this weekend, she won't see her fiancé for a few months because of their schedules, and she wants to put a ring on it before that happens. Did I tell you she is giving him a ring? No, but that's cool. I thought so too. Why wait for the guy to make the move? Anyway, I've got the whole thing planned for Saturday. A champagne picnic in the park, right by that massive oak tree near the trail. That tree is so beautiful. It's going to be stunning with draped white silk along the low branches. I bought a white chalkboard and put it in a gold frame on a gold stand, and I'm going to write "Be Mine Forever" on it in red chalk and decorate the top of it with roses and greenery and baby's breath. I shiver with excitement. That sounds wonderful and expensive. It's pricey. I've already spent way more than the initial deposit, but it'll be worth it. Did I tell you I got the 6 dozen red roses I wanted? I'm lucky the florist could help me out on such short notice, and they said if we do enough business together, they'll give me a discount. They referred me to a photographer named Ha Jun. I'm meeting him tomorrow at lunch, and he's already said he's available to photograph the event. He was expensive too, but his social pages are to die for. I've seen them. He's well known around here. He does great work, but are you charging enough to cover his fees too? The truth is, I've already spent more than I'm charging for the event, but I don't want to worry Ruby, so I play it off casually. I'm not making any money off this one, but it's a good learning experience, and I want everything to be just right. She has already given me permission to use some of the photos on my website and in marketing materials. That's saving me from buying stock images, so please don't lecture me. I know what I'm doing, and everyone in this town has been so kind and receptive to my flyers. Get the Yes is going to be a huge success. I can feel it in my bones. I checked my website this morning, and it's already had more than 100 views. That's not bad without any paid advertising, right? I think it's great, but why aren't you advertising? Between your dad's life insurance and selling his auto repair business, you can afford to run a few local ads. I know, but I want to start slow and grow my business organically while I iron out all the kinks. I get that, but you could— Rubes, I warn. Ruby is as organized and efficient as I am a fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants kind of girl. She would be a great resource for all things business-related, but she'd take over without even trying. It's just the way she is, bless her heart. I adore her, but she'd drive me crazy, wanting everything meticulously planned out to the nth degree 5 years into the future, like she's done with Perfect Pause. Our friendship is too important to me to risk ruining it over this. Plus, she and John are trying to get pregnant, and it has been a heartbreaking few months for them. She doesn't need added stress. Fine, she relents. I'll zip about that. But you do realize you'll have to gussy up for potential clients, right? Why? You don't think they'll hire me if I show up covered in pet fur? My words drip with sarcasm as I glance in the mirror at my cuffed jeans, yellow socks with colorful paw prints on them, and dirty blonde hair that I swear has a mind of its own. It's in a ponytail right now, but there are wayward strands poking out everywhere, like I walked through a wind tunnel. I don't know how that happens when I've been indoors this whole time, but it always seems to. And my pink sneakers have definitely seen better days. I'd hire you, but not everyone loves fur babies. You're right. I'm not looking forward to that aspect of the business, but I'm still my mama's daughter at heart. I can be a pretty proper Southern belle when necessary. You're always pretty, but proper? Well, we laugh. I can be unfiltered and outlandish, but I like who I am, and so does Ruby, and that's all I need. What are you doing tonight? She asks as we groom the dogs. I have a few things to do for the event, but they shouldn't take too long. Beyond that, I don't know yet. Why? Do you want to hang out? I was just curious. Sorry, but I can't hang out. I will be busy having wild, dirty, hopefully baby-making sex with my husband. I'm jealous. I can't remember the last time I had sex, and it wasn't with someone who loved me like John loves Ruby. According to Ruby, that brings sex to a whole new level. You want to have sex with John? She asks with a tease in her voice. No, gross. He's yours. Did you just call my husband gross? I didn't mean he's gross. It's just that he's yours, and that's sacred. Besides, he's not my type. You mean he doesn't meet all the ridiculous items on your Mr. Right checklist? What a surprise. No man alive can live up to all that. What can I say? I know what I like, and it's not organized and careful Ken dolls. I'm more of a G.I. Joe girl. I'm into rugged, dark, and spontaneous guys who roll with the punches and are comfortable in any situation and can fix anything. I know. No highfalutin egos for you, and you would kick Chris Pine or Ryan Gosling out of bed for their hair color alone, which I think is nuts. They're my hall passes. Yes, you've made John and me well aware of that. We continue chatting while I finish grooming Molly. When I'm done, I grab the box of bows. Okay, Moll, your daddy is going to be here any minute. What color should we go for today? I hold up the box and Molly sniffs a pink bow. A girl after my own heart. Maybe pink will get a smile out of your grumpy daddy. I pluck two pink bows from the box. Fletch isn't grumpy. Who's Fletch? I ask as I put the first bow in Molly's hair. Ruby's brows shoot up. Molly's owner? Why do you say it like I should know his name? Nobody calls him that. Even Laura calls him Molly's dad. Whatever. He's not grumpy. He's just reserved. If you say so, I pet Molly. But I'm pretty sure this big, beautiful girl is the only one Stuffy Steve smiles for. Molly pants happily. Ruby laughs. You're a lost cause. It's not my fault aloof Adam acts that way. The intercom on the wall buzzes and Laura's voice comes through. Destiny, Molly's dad is here. I'll bring her right out. I flash a victorious grin at Ruby, who rolls her eyes. Grumpy Gus is standing in the middle of the reception area, his expression as stoic as ever. His arms are crossed over his broad chest, legs planted shoulder-width apart, thigh muscles flexing against his dark slacks. His dirty blonde hair is short on the sides, slightly longer on top, and so thick it reminds me of plush carpeting. His scruff is perfectly manicured, as usual, and his light blue eyes are narrowed, like he doesn't trust me. Laura is sneaking peeks at him, but he seems oblivious to her appreciative glances. His gaze falls to Molly, and a smile blooms across his face, softening his hard edges for a second. Until those baby blues land on the pink bows in Molly's hair and his jaw tightens again. He grumbles.
Bows.
Molly loves them. She chose pink today. I hand him the leash.
She's a dog, he says flatly. She doesn't know what a bow is.
Then she's lucky I do, because she's a pretty girl and she deserves to look her best. He frowns.
The last time she ate one, and it cost me a few $100 at the vet.
My stomach sinks. Oh no, I'm so sorry. I wish you had noted that when you made this appointment. I quickly and carefully remove the bows, whispering to Molly, sorry, Moll. I tuck the bows into my apron pocket. I'll avoid bows from now on, and I'll pay for the vet bill if you'd like.
That won't be necessary.
If you had said something, he arches a brow.
I thought please don't put bows in her hair was pretty clear.
I assumed you just hated bows and you'd get over it, I say a little too defensively. His lips twitch into a semi-grin.
You know what they say about assuming. I hope you don't make a habit of ignoring your clients' requests.
I didn't ignore it. I just didn't think you meant it. He shakes his head.
Thanks for taking them out. We'll see you in a few weeks.
After the door closes behind him, Laura sighs dreamily. God, he's cute. I watch him through the window as he walks toward a Range Rover. Two women are openly checking him out in the parking lot, but he doesn't even look their way. Ruby walks in and puts a folder on Laura's desk.
Gawking at Molly's hot daddy?
Yes, Laura says. No, I'm just trying to see what you guys see. I mean, he's tall and fit, and he's handsome for a blonde, but he has no swagger. I watch him guide Molly into the SUV. He grabs her big head and plants a kiss on her snout, earning awes from Ruby and Laura. Okay, that was cute. I'll give you that. But his personality is so far from my checklist, it's in another country.
Chapter 2. Fletch. My phone vibrates with a text, and I look up from the paper I'm grading. Talia, where are you? Shit. I was supposed to meet her for coffee 5 minutes ago. Talia Dalton is one of my closest friends, as well as my colleague at Beckwith University, where I teach sociology. She was one of the first people I met there nearly a decade ago, and we clicked right away. Like me, she takes her job seriously and avoids drama, and with the exception of me and her husband, Derek, she has a general lack of trust in the opposite sex. Fletch. On my way. Sorry. Talia. Eye roll emoji. My phone rings as I head out of my office and I put it to my ear. Sorry, Tal, I was grading papers. What are you late for this time? My younger brother, Jimmy, asks. Coffee. How's it going? Better than it is for you. I'm working through my jobs for the wedding. Jimmy is marrying his childhood friend and girlfriend of the last few years, Beth Peterson, next month. Our older brother, Chuck, and I are sharing the honor of being his best man. That doesn't sound fun. I regret it as soon as the words are out of my mouth because Jimmy is so in love, I know he'll give me an overly enthusiastic lecture about how good it feels to be engaged to the love of his life. I, on the other hand, would rather drink tar than ever get married again, so I cut him off at the pass. And don't tell me about how great it is to marry Beth. I'm happy for you, but I'm on my way to meet Tal, so what do you need? It is great, he says with an audible shit-eating grin. Jim, I warn. He laughs. Did you get your tux? Did I say I would? Yes, but you're also late for meeting Talia for probably the 10th time this month. I got it. Great. Beth wants to know if you have a plus one yet. Why would she even ask that? She knows I have no interest in dating. My family has been annoying the hell out of me lately, telling me it's been long enough since my divorce and I need to get back out there. My mother has even started texting me pictures of her friends' daughters, asking if I'll accompany them to one event or another. The other day, she texted a picture of a barista and said she could pass along my number like she's some kind of wing woman. Because she loves you, dude. You know your dick will fall off if you don't satisfy it with something other than your hand every now and then? Just because I don't date doesn't mean I'm celibate. Though it has been several months since I've entertained a woman. I'm only giving you shit. We love you, man. It's not about sex, it's about connection. We'd like to see you let a woman into your life as more than a friend. Don't you miss that? No. Why don't you bother Chuck with this nonsense? Because he doesn't give off a get the fuck away from me vibe around women like you do. He goes out with plenty of them. When's the last time you planned a week away with anyone other than your dog? Molly doesn't annoy the shit out of me or bitch about everything I do. Molly and I spend a week at my fishing cabin every August, and I enjoy our annual long weekend away at a dog retreat where Molly gets to play with her own kind. Know what else she doesn't do? Stroke your ego or that other body part you like to ignore. As I round the corner toward the food court, I see the bane of my existence, my student, Cecilia Ullman. Fuck. I turn around, heading back the way I came as fast as I can. I'll take the long way to the food court. What's wrong? Stalker. There are always a couple of guys and girls in each class who get student/professor crushes and try to reel me in with excessive eye contact or unnecessary questions before or after class. But Cecilia is disturbingly relentless. Come on, she's got a harmless crush. You're used to that. This one feels more like a fatal attraction. The other day I found a rose on my windshield with a note about having a drink with her. And before you ask, yes, I've told her that I don't get involved with students. Take it as a compliment. I became a professor to educate and shape young minds, not to get compliments from women who are barely out of high school. I glance over my shoulder and breathe easier when I see she's not behind me. What else is going on? Are you going to show up Sunday, or are you blowing us off again? Jimmy lives in our hometown of Sunnyvale, and Chuck lives in Port Hudson. Both are neighboring towns to Harmony Point. They try to make it into town for a basketball game with me and my buddies once or twice a month on the weekends. Hey, if your wife came out of the bedroom in lingerie, you can't tell me you wouldn't blow us off just as fast. If a woman calling herself my wife came out of my bedroom getting laid would be the last thing on my mind. I walk into the food court and spot Talia sitting at our usual table by the windows. I head in that direction. I've got to go. Try to show up tomorrow if you can. Will do. Tell Talia I said hello. I end the call and pocket my phone as I approach Talia. Her wavy dark hair is tidily pulled back at the base of her neck. Her makeup and attire are demure and professional, and her smile reaches her eyes, despite my tardiness. Your coffee is probably lukewarm by now. She nods to the coffee she bought me. Sorry, I was grading papers and lost track of time. I sit down and motion to a pink and gold flyer on the table. What's that? It's for a company that does marriage proposal planning. I thought I'd give it to Scott since he's planning on taking the plunge. Like Talia, Scott is an English lit professor. I pick up the flyer and quickly scan it. Get the yes! Your personal romance concierge. Let our love expert create a magical and unforgettable proposal just for you and your forever love. We'll make your big moment stress-free and beautiful. We do the prep. You get the yes. Are you kidding? Now guys need other people to do their bidding. I scoff and push the flyer across the table. I think it's a great idea. It has to be stressful figuring out just the right proposal. No, it's not. Look at how Derek proposed to you. He didn't put on a show, and you were walking on air for weeks. I always thought Talia would fall in love with a great guy one day, but Derek took us all by surprise. He'd been a long-haired bartender and a dancer at a club back then. How he'd convinced Talia, who didn't like bars and blushed at the thought of watching a guy dance on stage, to go out with him was a wonder in and of itself. But here they are, 2 years later, happily married with a little boy named Evan. She grins and glances at her rings.
It was the perfect proposal. How did you propose to your ex?
I grit my teeth, not wanting to think about Elena, the proposal, or the way our marriage ended. I don't remember.
Which means you don't want to talk about it.
She holds up her coffee cup.
Here's to leaving the past in the past.
I toast with her and sip my tepid coffee. How's your day been?
Not bad. The end of the semester is always exciting and trying. Nobody really wants to be here, including me. But I do have new pictures of Evan to show you.
She shows me several pictures of her adorable dark-haired toddler.
He gets cuter every week.
He really does.
She sets her phone down.
He's into everything these days, but you'll see for yourself this weekend when you come to our dinner party.
I believe I already turned down that invitation. Ever since falling head over heels for Derek and having Evan, Talia has been trying to set me up with women, which is infuriating, since she knows better.
Yes, but you didn't really mean it. It's not like you have anything better to do.
Do I have some kind of sign on my forehead that says, "Don't believe me when I speak"? This is the second time in 2 days this has happened. The know-it-all dog groomer said the same thing to me about putting bows on Molly, and I was perfectly clear when I asked her not to. You know me, I'm always clear, and she has the nerve to argue with me about something every damn time I pick up Molly, as if she knows me at all. It's fucking irritating, and she talks with a southern drawl. I thought southern women were supposed to be sweet and passive. That's a gross generalization, but she sure gets a rise out of you. Maybe I should invite her to the get-together. I give her a deadpan look. She wears socks with paw prints on them.
You noticed her socks? Interesting.
Yes, I noticed her damn socks. I also noticed the dimple in her left cheek when she smiles, and the way her mouth looks too wide for her face. I've never tried to notice those things any more than I've tried to notice the way she looks at Molly with genuine affection, and at me with contempt. Or, at least, dislike. I have noticed way more than I want to, and her feisty attitude has been invading my thoughts for far too long. You're getting as bad as my family. I eye Talia as I take a drink. I liked you a lot more before you fell in love.
Because I was as cynical as you are?
Exactly.
Chapter 3. Destiny. I fell asleep on the couch Friday night, and much to my lazy cat Clementine's dismay, I was up at the crack of dawn Saturday morning, stressing over every detail for my first official proposal event. I took Ruby's advice and wore a floral halter dress with cute strappy sandals and spent extra time on my hair and makeup. I arrived 2 hours early to get everything set up so Ha Jun, the middle-aged, serious but friendly photographer, could take pre-event pictures. My client looks like the epitome of a bride-to-be in a white sundress, her loose and lovely blonde hair falling to the middle of her back. Her boyfriend is meeting her in 20 minutes, and Ha Jun is moving stealthily around us, capturing her first look at the elaborate and romantic setting for her proposal. Her eyes dance with excitement as she takes in the white silk I've draped over the branches of the stately oak tree, the picnic blanket with red rose petals scattered around it, and the antique wooden boxes, which I lined with white fabric that has red hearts on it. I filled one box with grapes and baguettes, and the other with flowers and mason jars full of strawberries and blueberries. The charcuterie board is tastefully done, and the pastries are displayed on a mint-green pedestal cake stand beneath a clear glass dome. A bottle of champagne and 2 fancy glass bottles of water, on which I've written their names in silver sparkling ink, are chilling in a silver ice bucket. An open wicker basket with wildflowers tucked into the corners holds the champagne flutes, plates, silverware, and fabric napkins. I added a romantic, old-fashioned lantern for effect and tucked a few pink flowers around the base. "This is so much more than I could have hoped for," she exclaims. "I'm glad you're happy with it. I had a lot of fun putting it together." "I love all the little touches, the wooden boxes, the wicker basket, the chalkboard. I feel like I walked into an Instagram photo shoot." "You did," I say with an easy laugh as Ha Jun captures our smiles. "The pictures are going to be gorgeous," which I'm thankful for since I'll be using them to promote my business. She peers into the glass dome at the pastries. "You even got the treats Ryan loves from that bakery in Sweetwater. You listened to everything I said." Molly's dad's voice tramples through my mind.
"I hope you don't make a habit of ignoring your clients' requests."
The snarky voice in my head says, "See, I listen." I push those thoughts away and focus on my client. "Of course I did. You hired me to give you the perfect, stress-free proposal. I wouldn't be very good at my job if I didn't listen." I glance at the time on my phone. "Ryan should be here any minute. I'm going to be watching from right over there." I point to a wooden bench by the paved path that snakes through the park. "I'm so nervous," she touches her hair. "Do I look okay?" "You look beautiful, and you're going to do great. Good luck." I give her a quick hug and head over to the bench, giddy with anticipation.
I take a deep breath as I sit down, thrilled with how things are going so far, and look up at the sky, imagining my father's loving, dark eyes watching over me. "This is it, Dad," I say just above a whisper so my client doesn't think I'm nuts. "I'm going to make you and Mama proud." Movement in my peripheral vision draws my attention, and I see Molly bounding down a hill. Happiness bubbles up inside me at the sight of my favorite four-legged client, and then I see grumpy Gus a few beats behind her, and my joy deflates. It's strange seeing them outside of work, and it takes a few seconds for me to realize Molly is bounding directly toward the picnic blanket. I scramble to my feet, running after her and calling out, "Molly!" just as my client shrieks and Molly tramples onto the blanket, knocking over the pastries and lantern as she lowers her big mouth over the charcuterie board and snatches up a hunk of cheese. "No! Molly, come back!" She bolts back the way she came and I chase after her. My client is screaming, Molly's dad is calling Molly's name, and Molly doubles back and barrels into me, knocking me off balance. Grumpy Gus grabs my arm and suddenly his eyes lock on my client and he grits out,
"Shit, I need your help. Just go with this."
"With what?"
"A kiss," he says urgently, eyes pleading.
Shocked, I stammer, okay. My voice is lost to the hard press of his warm lips as he tugs me closer. His arms circle me, holding me tight against his hard body. And boy, does he feel good. He even smells good. Spicy. His tongue glides over the seam of my lips, and I open for him, allowing him to take the kiss deeper. He tastes like coffee and mint, and his tongue sweeps slowly and possessively over mine. Holy cow, the man can kiss. Desire prickles hot and enticing inside me, and just as I give myself over to the kiss and my thoughts fall away, Molly's big paws land on my side, jarring me from my blissful state. I stumble back in horror at what I've just done, but he's still holding me, pulling me closer as my client's angry shouts cut through the air and Molly runs around us, barking. "What kind of business is this?" she fumes. "You're making out with my boyfriend." What? This is Ryan? My head is still spinning and I can't make sense of any of this.
"I'm not her boyfriend," he seethes through clenched teeth.
"I'm so confused," I mumble and pull my arm from his grip. "She hired me to put all of this together so she could propose to you." He looks mildly disgusted.
"You're the person behind those proposal flyers."
I lift my chin. "If you mean get the yes, then yes, I am."
"Why am I not surprised?"
he mutters with blatant irritation. I huff out of breath. "Didn't your mama ever teach you to be nice?"
"Didn't yours ever teach you to do your homework?"
He motions to Cecilia.
"She's a student of mine at Beckwith."
"Ryan, don't pretend—"
"Cecilia, stop,"
he demands.
"And it's Professor Fletcher to you."
"Wait, you're not even dating her?" I ask incredulously, and before he can respond, I turn on Cecilia. "You made all that up? He doesn't buy you red roses every week? He doesn't take you to antique shops on the weekends? Sweetie Pies isn't his favorite bakery?"
"Hell no,"
he growls. And the reality of what I've done hits me like a truck. "That's not true," Cecilia whines. "I heard you tell Professor Grant Sweetie Pies was your favorite."
"The only reason you overheard that is because you've been stalking me, and it ends now. I've told you multiple times that I don't get involved with students. Now I'll let the police and Beckwith administration handle you."
He puts his phone to his ear. Cecilia shoots me a death stare. If looks could kill, I'd be pushing up daisies right now. "You ruined everything," she snarls and stalks off as Ryan tells the police our location. Molly goes paws up against my stomach, and Ha-Joon captures it all for my first and worst event memory book.
Fletch.
I'm trying to focus on the policeman as he explains what I need to do to file a restraining order against my student, which sounds like a big fucking headache to me, but I can't take my eyes off the woman behind this fiasco, Molly's groomer, in that short floral halter dress that makes her look about 19 years old. I have no idea how old she is, but nobody gets that kind of confidence without a few years of real life behind them. She's making several trips to her car, arms full of decorations, food, and whatever else she has over there, and my dog is trotting along behind her. I've tried calling my fluffy monster, who licks the girl's face every time she crouches to pick something up. Groomer girl looks frazzled. She keeps dropping things and looking up at the sky, talking to herself. Molly thinks it's a game. She picks up some of what's been dropped and takes off with it. That's the only time Groomer Girl's too big smile appears, and for some reason it sends my mind straight back to that freaking kiss. I panicked when I saw Cecilia. I intended to just give Molly's groomer a quick peck to get Cecilia to back off. I don't know what happened. I must have lost my mind. I like tall women with meat on their bones, soft, womanly curves, breasts that more than fill my hands, a nice round ass, and ample hips made for holding on to. This girl is maybe 5'4 and skinny as a bird, but Jesus, that hot, willing mouth of hers drew me right in. I watch her climb into her car and drive away, and thoughts of what else I'd like to do to that mouth taunt me, as if I need that headache in my life.
"So you'll come down to the station?" the policeman asks, jerking me from my thoughts.
I clear my throat in an effort to clear my mind. What the hell is wrong with me? It was one kiss with a woman whose name I don't even know.
"Yeah," I motion to Molly, sniffing around the big oak tree. "I'll be there after I drop my dog off at home." With a nod, the policeman walks away. I silently chastise myself for that kiss. I imagine Groomer Girl telling her friend at the front desk of Perfect Paws about the kiss and realize I have to find a new groomer for Molly. Just one more headache to deal with. I whistle for Molly. "Come on, girl." Molly runs toward me with something red in her mouth. "What you got?" I give her a pet and take the wallet from her mouth. As I pull out a driver's license to see who it belongs to, a second one comes out with it. One local, one from Georgia. And I'm met with those Julia Roberts smiles. Groomer Girl looks like she's smiling for cameras on the red carpet, that alluring dimple in full force. I look down at Molly. "You couldn't have given this to her?" Molly barks and takes off again. What is it with females? Even my dog is defiant. I glance at the name, address, and issue dates on the licenses and realize with irritation that Groomer Girl lives around the corner from me. "You're a long way from Rosebell, Georgia, Destiny Amore. What happened? Did you get chased out of Georgia for setting up too many stalkers with their victims?"
Chapter 4. Destiny. I'm still trying to wrap my head around everything that just happened as I carry the picnic paraphernalia into the house I'm renting a few blocks from Main Street and the park. I bump the door closed with my butt and drop the last of the supplies from my epic failure on the floor by the living room. Between my mess from prepping for the event and my usual casual lifestyle, my place is kind of a disaster. Clementine jumps off the couch and prances over. His soft tail brushes my leg as he winds around my feet. Sighing, I scoop him up and kiss the scar where his left ear should be. I don't know what happened to it. It was missing when I found him. I love you, sweet pea, but now is not a good time. Mama's life dream was just turned upside down. I set him on the floor and pull my phone out of my dress pocket. I briefly consider calling Ruby, but I don't want to bum her out. So I call the person I've always turned to in times like these instead. With a heavy heart, I put the phone to my ear. My father's craggy voice takes my anxiety down a notch as I listen to his message. "Hi, Daddy. It's me. I am sorry to report that it was an utter disaster.
I pace by the stairs, my pulse quickening with agitation. The girl lied about everything, and the guy she said was her boyfriend turned out to be a grooming client, and he was madder than a cat on a hot tin roof. Disappointment swamps me. I don't know if I'm cut out for this. I want it so bad, but I don't know. I wish you were here. I wish you could send me a sign and let me know if I should cut and run or stick it out. A knock sounds at my door. I really believed this was it for me, you know? I thought I could do it, I say as I head over to answer the door. I pull it open and my chest constricts at the sight of a stoic-faced Ryan, or Fletch, or whatever his name is, standing on my front porch with Molly. A dozen thoughts race through my mind at once. I kissed him. Why is he here? How does he know where I live? And I realize I know nothing about this man. Embarrassment and worry trample through me. I gotta go, Daddy. Love you. I end the call, holding Ryan Fletch's gaze. How do you know where I live? Are you a stalker, too? Are the police with you? I lean out the door, looking for them as another concern hits me. Am I going to be arrested as an accomplice to your stalker? Is that a thing? Because I didn't know. A rough laugh tumbles past his lips. And now I'm thinking about those lips and that scorching hot kiss again.
It's probably a thing, he says. But no, you dropped your wallet at the park. I'm just here to return it.
He holds up my wallet. My relief rushes out. Well, butter my butt and call me a biscuit. For a minute there, I thought I was in trouble. Thank you. I reach for my wallet and feel Clementine's tail on my leg. Molly lunges for him, yanking the leash from Ryan Fletch's hand as she sprints after the cat. Molly, we shout in unison, and as Ryan runs after her, I slam the door and follow. Molly chases Clementine across the couches at breakneck speed, trampling over the pillow and blanket I slept with last night, and leaps over the side after the cat, knocking a lamp off an end table. Ryan Fletch yells for her as Clementine scurries under the coffee table, and Molly tries to do the same, knocking the dishes and everything else that's on the table to the floor. We both go for her leash, but Clementine bolts upstairs, and Molly races after him. Ryan Fletch curses as we run for the stairs, landing on the same one side to side and gets stuck.
Sorry,
he grumbles at the same time I say it, and we both turn sideways, freeing the other to move forward, just as Clementine darts down the hall past the steps and Molly barrels after him. We both hurry up to the next step, getting stuck again, and I laugh because, come on, what are the chances? He looks at me with such a serious expression, it makes me laugh even harder.
It's not funny, he snaps. She's making a mess of your house.
Have you seen my house? I ask through my laughter.
She's a monster. She could eat your cat.
Molly is not a monster. She's a bit of a bull in a china shop, but she's a sweetheart, and Clementine can fend for himself. Maybe you're the monster.
Yeah,
he says sarcastically. Well, you never smile. Shh, he holds up his hand, stopping me from moving. Rude.
Listen,
he demands and looks upstairs. I listen to the silence. I don't hear anything.
Exactly. That can't be good.
He waves me on, and this time he waits for me to go first. When we reach the landing, it's eerily quiet. I know Molly ran to the right, but I glance into the guest room on my left to assess the damage. Grumpy monster Gus peers over my shoulder. The bed has clearly been trampled over, but nothing else is out of place. Molly barks, and we hurry down the hall to my bedroom. Molly is in the middle of my bed in prime pounce-and-play position. Her chin is on the mattress between her forelegs, and her big furry butt is up in the air, tail wagging. She's staring at Clementine, who's sitting at the head of the bed, staring right back. I told you Clementine could fend for himself, I say as I walk into the room. The only thing he's afraid of is thunder.
Clementine's a boy? Never mind. Did you not notice your cat's ear is missing?
He grabs Molly's leash, and she's so excited to see him, she bursts to her feet on the bed and covers his face in slobbery kisses. I stifle a laugh. Molly didn't eat Clemmy's ear. It was missing when I found him. He was a scraggly, one-eared stray hiding beneath a truck full of clementines.
You might want to check to be sure he has all four legs.
He looks at Molly.
Down.
Molly licks him again, and he shakes his head, glowering at the dog, but there's an undeniable softness to that glower, like the way my dad used to look at me when he was angry at something I did, and it warms my heart. Maybe Ryan Fletch isn't such a monster after all.
Fletch. Down, Molly. I give her leash a yank, embarrassed that my friggin' dog has gotten fur all over Destiny's bed, freaked out her cat, and turned her house upside down. Molly jumps off the bed, heading for Destiny. No way, troublemaker. I tug her back to me and begin using my free hand to brush her fur off the sheets. Why isn't there a blanket or pillow on her bed? Destiny's cat stares at me like I'm the devil from her perch at the head of the bed, where the pillow should be. I'm sorry about this. I'll help you clean up. If anything's broken, I'll pay for it.
It's fine. Just leave it.
She loves on Molly, leaning closer to my slobbery beast as she speaks to her like they're best friends.
You were just doing what dogs do, weren't you, Moll? And Clementine is no worse for wear.
I go back to swiping at the furry sheets.
I'm the one who should be apologizing,
Destiny says.
I'm mortified about what happened at the park. I had no idea you were the guy we were mating, much less that you weren't dating Cecilia. There has to be something I can do to make it up to you.
I turn to face her, and my gaze catches on three colorful lace bras and matching panties hanging on a rope strung between hooks on either side of the windows. My mind skips right over the old rope-hook situation to ways in which she can make it up to me. I grit my teeth, trying to shut those thoughts down. The fact that I'm thinking about this mouthy mayhem of a woman that way proves what I already know. It's been far too long since I've satisfied those urges. I lift my chin in the direction of the lingerie. As much as I like your decorating, mind if we talk downstairs? It's a bit distracting. She looks over her shoulder, and her eyes bloom wide as if she is surprised by the lingerie. Her cheeks pink up, and she starts snagging the bras and underwear off the line, her words rushing out.
Yesterday was laundry day. I was drying them in the sun.
I'm sure your neighbors across the street loved that. I head for the hall with Molly, chuckling.
Can you just forget you saw those?
She pleads, following me downstairs. Probably not.
Brat.
She swats my shoulder from behind.
I've had enough embarrassment for one day.
Speaking of embarrassment, how could you not realize Cecilia was talking about me? Didn't you do any due diligence or ask for pictures of her boyfriend? I ask as we head into the living room, which looks like it was hit by a tornado. I turn to Molly. Sit. She obeys. Stay. My beast grins up at me like she didn't create the mess surrounding us.
Don't worry. I don't think Clem will come down while you're here.
I arch a brow. You sure?
Would you come down if you just got chased by a new friend who was 10 times your size?
A new friend? Good point. I unhook Molly's leash so she doesn't get caught on anything and give her a pet. Lie down. Molly slides down to her belly and rests her big head between her paws.
To answer your question, even if I had seen pictures, it wouldn't have changed anything. It's not like I know who you're dating.
But if she didn't have any pictures of us together, it might have tipped you off that something was wrong. I pick her laptop up off the floor and set it on the coffee table, hoping it didn't break, and begin picking up the dirty dishes that are now strewn across the floor as Destiny writes a lamp.
Maybe, but probably not. Cecilia was my first client, and I was so excited I didn't even realize I hadn't asked for pictures or proof of her relationship until the whole thing blew up.
Your first client? You just started this business?
Yep. I know you must think I'm crazy after everything that happened, but I've dreamed of being a proposal planner since I was a little girl.
She starts gathering what look like craft supplies and papers that are scattered around the floor.
I was sure I could be the best proposal planner ever to walk this earth, but now...
She shrugs and sets what she's picked up on the coffee table. I tell myself to let it go and get out of there, that it doesn't matter that self-doubt sounds wrong coming from such a confident woman, or that her hazel eyes, which have been dancing with delight every other time I've seen her, even when she's argued with me, are shadowed with sadness. But apparently my brain didn't get the memo, because why this business? Why marriage proposals? Comes out before I can stop it. She looks at me, she picks up a few notebooks from the floor, and her eyes warm.
Because I love love, and what could be better than helping people get to their happily ever after?
So you're an expert on love? I pick up a blanket to fold and realize it and the pillows on the couch match the sheets in her bedroom. I wonder why she slept on the couch. Lovers quarrel.
I'd like to think I am.
I glance at her left hand. I don't see a ring. Have you ever been engaged or married?
Well, no.
She moves to the other couch and starts folding another blanket. This woman has got me all kinds of confused. Have you ever been in love?
No,
she says softly.
But I've seen love and I've felt it.
Her entire face brightens.
I know what true love looks like, and it's the most beautiful thing you can imagine. We didn't have much when I was growing up, but we had an abundance of love.
Loving your family and being in love are two different things.
How do you know? Have you ever been in love?
Yes, a long time ago. I did the whole engagement wedding thing, and it didn't end well. I'm never drinking that Kool-Aid again.
Never? That's sad.
It's really not. It's called preserving my sanity. I put the folded blanket on the couch and pick up the throw pillows from the floor.
You just haven't met the right partner yet. I can't wait to fall in love. Want to know why I think I'm an expert on love? It's because of my parents. They were crazy about each other. You couldn't walk by them without feeling their love emanating around them. It was like another person standing with their arms around them, buffering them from everything else, keeping their love safe. Even the way they met and fell in love was romantic.
She barely slows down to take a breath as she snags things off the floor.
My mama had gone through a bad breakup, and on a whim, she closed her eyes and jabbed her pencil tip on a map of the world. That's how she ended up on a 10-day trip to Braga, Portugal. She didn't know a soul, and she couldn't speak the language either, but she wasn't afraid to go alone. She met my dad on her first day there, and he spoke English, which had to be fate. She'd been riding a bike she rented, and it got a flat tire. She walked 2 miles to his family's auto shop to see if they could fix it. The way they told it, they took one look at each other and felt something absolutely magical.
She presses her hands to her chest and looks up at the ceiling, dreamy-eyed and sighing. Her excitement is endearing, making her hard to look away from.
They spent every day together and fell madly in love, but at the end of those 10 days, they couldn't see a way to be together. My mother was all my grandmother had, and they lived together in Georgia, so she went back home to be with her, and my daddy stayed in Portugal. They didn't exchange phone numbers or addresses or anything. My mom told him it would be too painful to hear his voice and know they couldn't be together. But privately, I asked if she'd tried begging him to go with her, and she said, "Smart girls don't beg for love, and true love doesn't require begging." She cried the whole way home. I asked her what that was like, and she said she felt like a falling star, lost and alone. I couldn't imagine her ever feeling that way, because if you knew her, you'd know how confident and capable she was. She set out on that adventure to Portugal alone and unafraid, but she said when she got home, she couldn't figure out who she was without him. 10 days was all it took to forever change her.
Her enthusiasm has me invested, and I need to know what happened next. If they didn't exchange numbers or addresses, how did they end up together?
That's the best part. 2 days later, my father showed up at the lake where she'd mentioned she walked her dog. He'd been waiting there for 12 hours, afraid if he left, he'd miss his chance to find her. They were married 2 months later, and you know what? He gave up everything to be with her. His parents told him if he left their family and the business that had been in their family for generations to follow a woman he barely knew, they'd never speak to him again. Can you imagine having to choose between your family and the woman you love?
No, but I'd never choose a woman over my family. Never again. Been there, done that.
Well, I'm sure glad he did, Mr. Naysayer. My mother followed a whim, my father followed his heart, and they found true love. They always said they were destined to be together, which is why they named me Destiny.
Destiny Amore with her head in the clouds. It's perfect. Her smile falters.
But then my mom died when I was 11, and my dad and I became the falling stars.
She tears up, and I feel a tug deep in my chest. I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
She breathes deeply, fanning her face.
Sorry. I still think about her every day, but don't worry, I'm not gonna cry.
She lifts her chin, and a dim version of her smile appears, as if to prove her point.
I learned how to buck up and be strong right quick after that, because I knew two falling stars could crash and burn. I had to be there to push my daddy back up when he got too low, and of course, he tried to do the same for me.
She wears her heart on her sleeve, and I've had mine locked down for so long I don't even know what to do with it. That would be difficult at any age, but I can't imagine what it was like for you at 11.
It wasn't easy. I did a lot of lying to myself, telling myself I was fine. But my best friend, Ruby, the one who owns Perfect Paws, was there for me. And remember that thing I said about growing up with an abundance of love? My family was everything to me. They still are, and their love pulls me through the toughest times. I used to get real sad when it would rain because my mama and I used to dance in the rain, and I just couldn't do it after she was gone. But a few months after she died, it was raining real hard, and I swear I heard her calling me from outside. I went out there and felt her all around me. I will never stop dancing in the rain because I still feel her in every drop.
She's endured so much grief, my throat thickens at the weight of it.
I believe my mama was smiling down on my daddy and me back then, nourishing us with her love from the heavens above. I know I did her proud by taking care of my father and staying in Rosebell after high school.
That was a thoughtful thing to do. I probably would have made a similar choice. Did you go to community college? She shakes her head and sinks down to the couch.
No, my mother didn't have life insurance or anything, and my father didn't have a lot of money, so I followed in my mama's footsteps and became a hairdresser. I enjoyed it, and all that really mattered was that I was close to my dad. He and I were like this.
She crosses her fingers.
I could always count on him to listen to me and give me advice and just to be there, you know? He always knew how to make me feel special and pick me up when I was down or sick. For as long as I can remember, whenever something big happened, he'd bring me pink carnations. They're my favorite flowers, and when I was sick, he'd read me my mom's favorite book.
What book is that?
The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society. It's a weird title and a big story for a little girl, but it was a good one, and it always made me feel better because I remembered my mom smiling and crying when she read it. But my father died of a heart attack last year.
Her eyes tear up again, her southern drawl thickening as her emotions take over, turning that tug in my chest to a full-on fissure.
It was completely unexpected. He seemed strong as an ox, and suddenly I was a fallen star again. Only those lies I told myself didn't come as easily, and I didn't buck up quite as well as I did after I lost my mama.
Tears spill down her cheeks, but she's still trying to smile. I could have sworn I heard her tell her father she loved him on the phone when she answered the door, but I must have misheard. I can't fathom how someone who has suffered so much loss, and in her father's case so recently, could push through life with such a positive attitude. Jesus, Destiny, I'm sorry. Do you have other family? She shakes her head.
I never met my father's family, so it's just me and, of course, Ruby. She moved here after college, but was still there for me. She came back to Georgia and stayed for 2 weeks, helped me get through the funeral. But I'm not going to lie. I had so much sadness inside me, it felt like it was seeping out my pores, and I was leaving a trail of it everywhere I went.
She swipes at her tears and looks up at the ceiling.
Ugh. Listen to me going on about myself.
She breathes deeply and wipes her eyes before meeting my gaze.
First you see my lingerie, and now I'm blubbering about my dead daddy. It's a wonder you're not running out that door.
Actually, first you tried to marry me off to a stalker. She covers her face.
I can't believe I did that. I'm going to make it up to you. I'll walk Molly every day for a month.
I shake my head, glancing at my beast sleeping by the stairs. You don't need to do that.
Yes, I do. It's only proper that I make amends. I love Molly, and she could probably use the exercise while you're teaching. How did we get on the subject of my family anyway?
I asked why you got into the proposal business. I'm curious about how you ended up here. Did you move to be closer to Ruby?
Yes. The memories in Rosebell were too painful. When I sold my father's auto repair shop, I moved here and started working with Ruby. I don't really need the money because after my mama died, my daddy bought life insurance and his business sold for a pretty penny. But I'd go stir crazy sitting around the house all day.
Didn't you say you were a hairdresser? Did you have any pet grooming experience?
No, but it's not so different from making people beautiful,
she says cheerily.
Ruby taught me to groom the animals, and I don't work full-time. My schedule is flexible, and working part-time gave me a chance to settle in and get my website and flyers ready and start collecting supplies for Get the Yes.
She motions to the stacks of decorations and other paraphernalia.